We talked about the different order of the trials. We talked about last week the trial before Annas, and then in John chapter 18 and verse 24, if we began there tonight, at the end of the trial where Annas had questioned him. Now, Annas was not actually the high priest, but he was the father-in-law of the high priest, and many still considered him the high priest, even though he had been kicked out of the office. But then at the end of him questioning Jesus, Annas then sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Now, in Matthew's gospel, Matthew kind of skips over the situation with Annas. And so what we talked about is we have six trials. And these six different trials that occurred, three before the Jewish religious leaders and three before the political leaders of the day. And so you had this first trial before Annas that was mentioned by John, and then he makes reference to them leading him to Caiaphas, but he doesn't talk about what happens at the trial with Caiaphas. Luke also mentions that the entire Sanhedrin had a meeting, a trial, at daybreak, either just before, just after, right around daybreak as well. And then we also read about him being before Pilate, and he is then taken to Herod, and then he's taken back to Pilate again. So those are the six. You have Annas, Caiaphas, the Sanhedrin, Pilate, Herod, and Pilate again. John specifically mentioned, I won't say details, because we don't know everything that happened in these trials, but John does give us some of the events of the first, fourth, and sixth. He completely skips over. He does tell us that they're going to Caiaphas, but he doesn't tell us what happens when they get there. He doesn't talk about the Sanhedrin at all. And he doesn't talk about Herod. And so again, we talked about before how important it is to put the entire picture together, to look at all four of the gospel accounts to get all of the events together. If you only read John's, you would think, well, Jesus had one trial, and maybe even think Jesus had one trial before the high priest, and then he went before Pilate, and that was it. You might think two trials. You might not even realize that he went before Pilate, and then he was sent to Herod, and then back to Pilate. You might not even realize that necessarily. So it is important that we blend all of the gospel accounts together, just as a situation where there was some sort of an incident, an accident, or even a crime committed, and there were several witnesses. The police want to get statements from all of those witnesses because they want to see who saw what. And they want to be able to piece all of those things together. And chances are there's someone that saw something that somebody else didn't see. One person couldn't see what was happening on the other side of this tree, but somebody on the other side of the tree saw what was going on over there, or various different things of that nature. And so it is with the gospel accounts, that these four accounts, when they are pieced together, give us a fuller picture of the events that took place. But of course, as John says, even when we have all four of them together, we need not think that we have the entire picture of everything that Jesus did and taught during his lifetime. John makes it very clear to us, this isn't everything. And so even with these trials, as we see some of the questioning that takes place and Jesus' responses to those questions, it may not be everything. It may just be a portion of what took place there. And it may not have given us all of the details of every question that was asked. Some of these trials, for example, well, we know that he was arrested in the night, and these trials lasted, of course, moving him from one place to another as well, but these trials lasted on until the next morning. It wasn't until after daybreak a good while that Pilate actually sentenced him to be executed, and then he was crucified that morning. That's amazingly quick, though, too, isn't it? Can you imagine in our criminal justice system somebody being tried one day and sentenced that day and executed that day? That just doesn't happen. People are on death row for 30 years with all these different appeals pending and everything like that. So it certainly was a different world and a different type of court system
to say the least.
But Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas. Matthew records it this way: then those who had seized Jesus led him to Caiaphas the high priest, where the scribes and the elders had gathered. And so he talks about how they were already getting together there. Then in verse 58, Matthew continues, Peter was following him at a distance as far as the courtyard of the high priest, and going inside he sat with the guards to see the end. Then in verse 59, now the chief priests and the council were seeking false testimony against Jesus that they might put him to death. In fact, back at the beginning of Matthew chapter 26, that we didn't include in this part, we see them conspiring and plotting together. In fact, back in verse number 3, they assembled together the chief priests and the scribes and the elders of the people to the palace of the high priest who was called Caiaphas, and they counseled that they might take Jesus by subtlety and kill him. Now here's the intro. But they said, not on the feast day, lest there be an uproar among the people. They weren't very good at planning, were they? They didn't want to do it around the feast day, but then, lo and behold, what are they doing? They're out there arresting him right as the Passover feast is coming up. So they weren't very good at following through. But they were planning this and plotting this. And all along, they had been asking, hey, if anybody can figure out any way to get him. And that's where Judas came in, and Judas said, hey, I can deliver him into your hands. And they offered him the 30 pieces of silver to be able to do that, and so forth. As we consider these things, and we talk about, yeah, we've got this one here and that one there. One of the things that we notice, we talked about before the four different gospel accounts. We talked about the fact that they were written to different audiences. Matthew was written primarily to the Jews. He quotes an awful lot of the Old Testament scriptures for them, making references constantly to Jesus fulfilling this prophecy or that prophecy. Then we've got Mark, who's written more to the Roman world. That's, you know, the war machine, the let's do it right now, the busy world that's a lot like our world today. The Roman world was a lot like our world today is. And Mark is writing to them, and so he's constant action, constantly doing things, going here, going there. And because of that, Mark's gospel is the shortest. And then Luke, of course, writing to the educated people. Luke was a doctor, and so he's writing an educated one to this Theophilus, who is a lover of God, a friend of God. And we don't know who Theophilus was, but Luke wrote to Theophilus. And it's very interesting, because as we're trying to piece these things together, Luke's gospel is particularly helpful because of something that Luke does that the others do not necessarily do. Luke puts things in a chronological order, which is the way we would tell a story. We would start at the beginning and we'd go through to the end. Whereas Matthew kind of groups things together according to subject matter. And Mark kind of follows a similar type pattern as to what Matthew does. And John, of course, is so focused on the spiritual teaching of Jesus that he doesn't really concern himself with the putting the events, this event, then this event, then this event, then this event. He's just trying to group together the different spiritual teachings that Jesus had into these events. I want us to think about something that Luke says at the beginning of his gospel that's very significant to our understanding of his gospel as well as helping us piece the other gospels together. At the beginning of the gospel of Luke, he says, "For as much as many have taken in hand to set forth in order a declaration of these things which are most surely believed among us, even as they delivered them unto us, which from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word, it seemed good to me, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write unto you in order, most excellent Theophilus, that you might know the certainty of those things wherein you have been instructed." So Luke tells us right at the beginning of his gospel account, as he's writing to Theophilus, he says, "Let me tell you what I'm doing. I am trying to write these things in order. I want to put them in the order that they occurred." And so anytime there is a seeming contradiction between the events of one of the Gospels and the events of Luke's Gospel, we look to Luke to say, okay, which order did it happen in? Because Luke is writing things in order. We see this in the temptation of Jesus Christ. Matthew 4 and Luke 4 both account of the three temptations of Jesus in the wilderness by Satan. But they put them in a different order. We trust Luke's account to be the one that's in the actual chronological order that they occurred, because that's what he said he was doing. And we remember that Matthew was not concerned about the chronological order. He was concerned about the themes and keeping themes together. And so he records the event. And it's interesting that if you actually look at the original language, you can see that in the wording differences between the way Matthew accounts for that. He says, oh, Satan did this and tempted Jesus this way. Satan did this, tempted Jesus this way. Satan did this, tempted Jesus this way. But Luke says, first Satan did this. Then he did this. Then he did it. And so he clearly is putting these things in the order that they happen. And that's a fascinating thing, that we can see a difference in the way these Gospels were written. And it also helps us to understand that many times things that some people throw up there as though this is a contradiction, like with these trials. So that, well, John says he went before before Annas, and Matthew says he went before Caiaphas. Which one was it? Why can't it be both? He went before Annas when Annas was finished with him, then he goes before Caiaphas. But John didn't talk about what happened when he was tried by Caiaphas, and Matthew didn't talk about what happened when he was tried by Annas. They just didn't both talk about each thing. And so we find that throughout the Gospels, that they didn't always tell exactly the same details. And it's very interesting because skeptics of the Bible want to have it both ways. Anywhere where all of the Gospels record the same events and record it in the same ways, they say, well, you know, that just proves it's not inspired. They copied each other. But anywhere where there's differences, where they aren't exactly the same, they say, well, see there, they're not the same. They should have been the same if they were telling the same story. Well, wait a minute. You can't have it both ways. When they're the same, you say they copied each other, but when they're not the same, you say, well, that's a contradiction and they aren't inspired. Either way you have it, you want to say they weren't inspired. The fact of the matter is, anytime two or more people are telling the stories of the same events, they're not going to tell everything exactly the same, but they're going to tell some things the same. If they were all there for those events, they're going to tell some of those events in the same way. But some, they're going to tell some different details. Some different things would have stuck out to one person than another. It amazes me sometimes even the things that my children will remember. And they say, Daddy, you remember when we did this and this and this? And I have no memory of us doing that. I don't remember it. And I remember, oh, you remember when we did that? I don't remember us doing that. We remember different things. Different things make a bigger impact on different people for different reasons. And so it is with the gospel accounts. And God used that to His advantage. So here we are then with Caiaphas. They had tried to find false testimony to put Jesus to death. So as Jesus is standing before Caiaphas, they couldn't find any. Many false witnesses came forward. They said lots of different things. Now remember, this trial likely lasted over an hour. What we have is approximately 12 verses. These 12 verses is not an entire hour's trial or whatever. It could have been an hour. It could have been an hour and a half or 2 hour long trial. And we've got 12 verses that takes about less than a minute, really, to read if we just read it straight through. So there's a lot that happened there. It talks about these many false witnesses came forward, but it doesn't record what all of them said. There's no telling how long that part of the trial lasted. At last, two came forward. And they said, verse 61, this man said, I'm able to destroy the temple of God and rebuild it in 3 days. And did Jesus say that? Well, yes and no. That's close to what he said. it's not what he meant. And they've twisted his words, of course. He said, if you destroy this temple, and he was talking about the temple of his body. But the people, as usual, misunderstood him and thought he was talking about the big stone structure temple. And so these two finally come forward and they say, oh, he said he could rebuild it in 3 days. Well, now, that sounds like a fish story if you put it that way. You know, it sounds like a lot of the bragging that people do about, oh, the things I could do and this, that, and the other. Not exactly something worthy of putting someone to death for, however. And of course, we also notice, he didn't say he was going to destroy it. He said, if you destroy this temple, I'll rebuild it in 3 days. He wasn't talking about destroying the temple himself, which is what they try to make him out to say. Then the high priest stood up and said, have you no answer to make? What is it that these men testify against you? How do you answer a trick question? What can you say? I remember all the times, you know, that we used to work on making those trick questions, you know. I pick on Bobby, you know, and say, Bobby, when did you stop beating your wife? Now, how's he going to answer that? Because if he says, well, wait a minute, I haven't stopped beating, wait a minute, then he's still beating her. Well, that's not good. If he says, well, wait, I stopped, wait a minute, then he's admitting that he used to, but he stopped. Well, how do you answer that? Well, of course, in that case, you have to say, well, I never did beat my wife. Never has happened. But so many times these trick questions that people will ask you to try to stump you. And so they make up something. They say that Jesus said he was going to destroy the temple in Jerusalem and rebuild it in 3 days. And they said, well, are you going to answer these charges? Well, what can he say except to say, I never said that? Oh, you twisted my words. You've changed things. You've made it out to be something I never said. But how can he answer a question like that? It's a trick question. There's no right answer. Some husbands learn that earlier than others, that when they're arguing with their wives, the correct answer is always, yes, dear. You know, that's the correct answer. We learn that. In verse 63 then, Jesus remained silent. And the high priest said to him, I adjure you by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. So now, the high priest has called God as a witness and said, now you have got to tell us, are you the Son of God? What do you say? If Jesus denies at this point, well, he can't deny who he is. If he keeps himself silent at this point, then he allows them to believe that he's not the Son of God, and he can't do that. So the high priest has put him in a pickle where he's got to confess the truth. He's got to tell the truth. And Jesus said, you have said so. But I tell you from now on, you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power and coming on the clouds of heaven. And they say, well, Jesus might have gone a little too far with that answer. He went just where he needed to go. He told them, yes, you said that, but you're right. Let me tell you what's going to happen in the future. You're going to see this happening. Well, of course, the high priest and his cronies have the reaction you would expect. The high priest tore his robes and he said, he has uttered blasphemy. What further witnesses do we need? You have now heard his blasphemy. So he looks then to the others that are there with him. You heard him. You heard him say this. I don't know exactly what they did hear him say. That you have said so is really the thing, probably, because he's basically said, yeah, you're telling the truth. When you ask if I'm the Son of God, you're telling the truth. You're right. That's it. And so they're saying, okay, so you've admitted to being the Son of God. And they understood that if he was the Son of God, then he was God. I mean, we understand that's the way these things work, right? The son of a man is a man. The son of a dog is a dog. The son of a tree is a tree. You know, the son of a cow is a cow. That's the way these things work. If he's the Son of God, then he's God. And he's just admitted it to them all. If they'd have had half a brain, they would have seen it before this by all of the miracles that he performed and by all the teachings that he'd done. And time and time again, I mean, to the point of raising people from the dead, healing the blind, which had never been heard of, being done before since the beginning of the earth, all of these things, making the lame to walk, casting out demons, all of these things that he did, it should have been clear. There are none so blind as those who will not see. But he says, you've now heard his blasphemy. What is your judgment? And they answered, he deserves death. Now, of course, this is one of the illegal trials that they had because under Jewish law, when someone had been arrested, he could not be immediately tried like this. He could not be tried until the following day. Now, that's not in the law of Moses. That wasn't something that the law of Moses stated. But that was their law that they had made. It wasn't even God's law. It wasn't a matter of they weren't keeping God's law. They weren't even keeping their own laws that they had made. They had agreed to that law. They had made that law that, hey, when we arrest somebody, we won't try them until the following day before they have their trial. And they violated their own laws that they made. Of course, they violated many of God's laws as well. But they all said, he deserves death. And then they spit in his face. They struck him. Some of them slapped him. And they said, prophesy to us, you Christ. Who is it that struck you? Now this is another interesting one. And this is another one where we realize how significant looking at other things is. Okay, so these folks are spitting in his face. Now in order to spit in somebody's face, you've got to be standing in front of them. So they spit in his face, and they hit him, and they slap him. And, you know, to slap somebody, hit somebody, you've got to be pretty close by. And then they say, prophesy to us, you Christ, who struck you? Well, now, if you're standing right in front of me and you spit at me and slap me, you think I can tell you who it is? Well, you would think so, wouldn't you? But what Matthew doesn't record for us is that during this time, Christ was blindfolded. They blindfolded him, and then they spit on him and struck him and said, who prophesied to us? Who did it? Well, that makes it a little more challenging, doesn't it? But Matthew doesn't give us that little detail. And it is just a little detail. It doesn't make Matthew's gospel untrue in any way. But it's just one detail that he didn't see as important enough to even include. But that's what was actually going on there, is they had him really blindfolded so he couldn't see who was spitting at him and striking him. Now, could he have answered that? Could he have told them, every one of them, which one hit him where and which one spit at him where? Yes, he could have. Not only that, he could have told them their entire history, who their mother was, who their father was. Could have told them the thoughts of their hearts and the sins that they had committed in their entire life. They didn't really want him to prophesy. I often wonder what a scene it would have been had he started. It's like I think about that with the story in John 8 of the woman caught in adultery and he's drawing in the sand and all the men are saying that. And I wonder what was he thinking. He could easily have stood up and listed off the sins of every one of those men standing around that circle condemning that woman. But he didn't do it. You see, when Jesus came the first time, the time that's recorded here in the Gospels, when He came to save the world, not to condemn it. But when He comes a second time, at the second coming, He's not going to be coming to save the world. He's going to be coming to judge it. Thessalonians tells He's going to be coming in flaming fire, taking vengeance on those that do not know God and that do not obey the gospel of Jesus Christ. Are you prepared? These folks were standing in judgment over Christ, condemning Him. But one day, they will be the ones on trial. Each and every day, we put Christ on trial. Do we really believe He's Lord of our lives or not? And how we choose each and every day of our lives will determine then when we stand on trial what the verdict for us will be. We need to think very carefully about these things. As we see Jesus tried, we need to ask ourselves, what's going to happen when I'm tried? Am I right with God? If not, why not? What can I do to get right with God? If you're not a Christian tonight, you need to become one. If you've never repented of your sins and confess Jesus as the Christ and been buried with Him in baptism to wash your sins away, you need to do that. If you've done those things, but perhaps you just haven't been living your life as a faithful Christian should, then perhaps that's what you need to do in order to get your life right with God before you have to stand before Him in judgment day. If you have a need to respond this evening for any reason, please do so as we stand and as we sing.